Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, y'all. Seven Rounds in Heaven is back. We're brought to you by the Armchair Media Network. Urban Meyer is back in Florida. It is I, Rob Paul, a.k.a. the spokesperson for getting Matt Canada the OC job in Pittsburgh. And with me, as always, is AJ. Bye-bye, Brian. Marchese.
And welcome back, Scott Linehan, potentially.
Today, we're going through our 2020 NFL All-Rookie Team. Let's hit it.
Seven rounds in heaven with my baby. Driving up to Cleveland, maybe. Looking for a Lawrence or Sewell. Don't draft specialists on the first day, eh? Don't draft specialists on the second day, eh? Maybe draft a punter in the sixth.
We'll see.
Let's go seven rounds. Let's go seven rounds together. Let's go seven rounds forever.
And that's a song.
The wait is finally over. Football is in full effect, and the NBA is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline. Your online sportsbook experts. Just four declarations since our last show, all of which come from the national title-winning Alabama Crimson Tide. Quarterback Mac Jones, receiver Jalen Waddle, interior defensive lineman Christian Barmore, and cornerback Patrick Surtain. Feels like three potential locks to be first round picks, yeah. And then maybe the only quarterback taken on day two of the draft,
and potentially could go in the first round. I don't know, but we'll see. Yeah, and all four guys, like, we knew were coming out, no surprises at all. I wonder, like Devonta Smith wasn't a part of this, but I don't think that means anything at all.
No, AJ, no. But that does hint at something we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. I think, who do you think goes off the board first, Waddle or Surtain?
I think Surtain goes first. Surtain, honestly, I think he had such, like, obviously he had such a fantastic year. And it almost feels like he's one of those guys that was so good that, like, people just didn't talk about him week in, week out. Because, like,
well, he did win SEC Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, so it's not like we were talking about how amazing his performance was every week. Like, we mentioned him a couple times on the show for best prospect. Even then, it's like, yeah, it's just another shutdown day for Patrick Surtain. You know what I mean?
I wonder if he ends up going being the first corner off the board. I still lean Caleb Farley, but obviously we're very far out. Mm-hmm. And I mean, hey, if Jalen Waddle runs a 4.31. Who knows? Maybe he's the first receiver off the board. That's something you hinted at months ago.
Yeah, and I mean, Devonta Smith's dominance kind of, and then the injury obviously kind of maybe washed that a little, but there's always still a chance when a guy runs crazy speeds.
Don't be surprised if both Smith, Waddle, and Surtain go top 10.
Yes.
And then Barmore, we waxed poetic about him last week. The definite, at this point, definite top interior defensive lineman in the class.
Correct.
And I think he's the only one who I wasn't sure for sure would declare just because he's just a redshirt sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
But was happy to see him because it's a big boost to this interior D-line class.
Definitely.
And then Mac Jones is Mac Jones. He's not gonna, I don't think he's gonna, I did see someone, I think it was Matt Miller, was saying if he can get to the Senior Bowl, that'd be a good place for him to be, because it's hard to separate him from the talent around him at Alabama, and it certainly doesn't help that Tua struggled this year.
That's a good point, and especially because he seems like a guy that's going to be great in interviews and stuff, and just scouts and coaching staffs being able to interact with him. I think that'd be big for him down in Mobile.
I just want to see him throw to other receivers who aren't the greatest receivers in the world.
That's also true.
But I do think, yeah, if I mean, I don't really, I don't, I've seen people saying first round. I think by the time the draft comes around, he's like a 50 to 100 kind of range for him.
Yeah, I feel the same way as you. But obviously, we're going to see the first round projections because he just came off an insane season and just won the fucking national championship game. So.
And two Senior Bowl acceptances, one being Alabama left tackle Alex Leatherwood, the other being Kentucky center Drake Jackson. I'm excited about Alex Leatherwood. I think that's so big. Potential first-round pick, but I don't think he's really there for most people.
No.
So getting him there, and let's see how he looks. A lot of people are projecting him to guard.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great opportunity to show what he's got as a pass protector against some of the best pass rushers in the country. And, I mean, Nagy's put together a really good pass rusher group in Mobile this year, so... I'm excited.
No, I definitely agree. And Drake Jackson, solid pickup too. And but yeah, all those key storylines with Alex Leatherwood are gonna be really fun to watch.
I'm excited for the trench play. I was diving in a little bit. I've got a draft crush on each side of the ball that's gonna be at the Senior Bowl. Georgia guard Ben Cleveland, and this one's a little bit more of a surprise maybe. Tulsa defensive lineman Cameron Sample.
Tulane.
What did I say?
Tulsa.
I do that all the time.
Yeah, I know. I swear to God, I do it too. Don't worry.
It's the tease. It's the golden hurricane. It's the green wave. It's a color and a thing.
Yeah. So you're lucky.
In a natural disaster.
That's true. You're lucky you said Tulsa, though, or else I was going to accuse you of your Tulane bias slipping in there. But now I know it's you're trusting the tape, and it's not just scouting the helmet.
I really appreciate that. Okay, I alluded to this when you alluded to it as well. The NFL, doesn't make sense. The NFL informed teams that players who have completed their regular eligibility in the NCAA must notify the league by March 1st if they will be foregoing the 2021 NFL draft to return to college to use that free COVID season. Obviously, because of the pandemic, this college football season didn't count against anybody's eligibility. So, like AJ said earlier, but Devonta Smith declaring. It is what we have seen is some seniors are legitimately declaring, just so it's clear.
Yep.
This is weird. Just because when Tom Pelissero tweeted it, the follow-up tweet mentioning how Michael Turk went undrafted last year and got a waiver to go back to Arizona State, kind of set a precedent. So they also added in with this memo that if a guy gets drafted but goes back to college, that NFL team will retain his rights. It is pretty weird. I have a hard time seeing a guy wanting to go back to college if a team drafted him already, because he can't improve his draft stock, and he won't get that his rookie. He won't get his. He's basically delaying his rookie contract for a year.
Yeah. So the NFL just slipped that in to protect any teams from. Possibly getting, losing out on a guy like that. I do. So we'll definitely not see any guys who get drafted go back. But I do wonder if we see more Michael Turk situations this year.
That should be a thing in general. I think we've both talked about that before.
Yeah. No, I know.
If a guy declares and goes undrafted, there should be a 2-week window for him to decide if he wants to sign undrafted or return if he's got existing eligibility. He can return to college.
Yeah, and I don't want to say this is – I totally agree, but I don't want to say if these are connected, but the undeclaring deadline or the opting out of the draft deadline being March 1st, pretty late in the process, maybe in the future that makes that makes some more wiggle room that, like you just mentioned, maybe early May we'll see guys being able to go back to college. But that's all in the NCAA's ball court.
It's weird. We should just, I don't know why you would rather a guy go undrafted than help himself. But hey, that's the NCAA.
Do you think we're going to see a lot of guys pushing that March 1st deadline and saying they're going back?
I think you said to me when we were talking about it earlier in the day that it's there, but I don't think it'll really come back into effect.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Like, unless a guy really is hearing the wrong things about his draft stock and then by then kind of figures it out. The other thing is that would be right around the NFL Combine, if the NFL Combine happens. So if something weird happens there, I don't know. I don't see it really mattering all that much. And if it does, it'll be with guys who are not really on the radar, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it'd have to be like an extenuating circumstance where, like, knock on wood, God forbid, like some sort of bad injury in training or something like that, that would really, really knock a draft stock down. Like, you know, it doesn't happen too often, but you know what I'm talking about. Or maybe a medical popping up even at the combine. Maybe those are opportunities. But yeah, I don't see it really coming into play. But time will tell.
It's interesting, but yeah, I don't think it'll be a big deal.
Me neither.
And then, of course, it's the off season for some teams. So we've got GM hirings. We've got our first head coach hiring. Time is happening in the NFL. If it's not anywhere else, it's happening in the NFL.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but okay.
So a couple GM hirings. Houston Texans hired Nick Caserio from the Patriots. Denver Broncos hired George Patton from the Vikings. The Lions hired Brad Holmes from the Rams. And the Panthers hired Scott Fitterer from the Seattle Seahawks.
Which one gets you the most jazzed up?
I think Brad Holmes is by far the most interesting.
And he's the shortest tenured in a senior position of all the hires. It's kind of cool that all the guys you can trace back to their organizations for such a long time. Like, Fitterer goes back to Seattle since 2001, same as Caserio. Patton's been in Minnesota for, I don't know, 14 years.
And Patton was with Spielman with the Bears, the Dolphins, and then went to the Vikings with him. And with him, it's a little more interesting because they're saying he's had opportunities in the past, obviously having been since, 2006 or whatever, the assistant GM to Spielman with Minnesota. He's turned down other opportunities. He's been waiting for the perfect one. He goes to Denver, where John Elway has said the GM will have last say. So that kind of makes me think that originally when he said that, I didn't necessarily believe it, but that kind of makes me believe it a little more that Patton would take that jump or make that jump after all these years of kind of waiting.
No, that's a really good point. I think, I don't know, all these hires are solid. Like, the Caserio one is, I mean, it looks the worst because of the Deshaun Watson situation.
Yeah, I don't like that one.
I know.
I don't like the whole Jack Easterby thing, then him getting Caserio, them not listening to the search firms who suggested Omar Khan, who they were in the process, who is in the Steelers front office, who they're in the process of getting a deal done with when Easterby, took Cal McNair aside and, whispered in his ear, the evil fuck he is. And next thing you know, Nick Caserio's the GM, Deshaun Watson's AWOL, Deshaun Watson trade rumors are happening, which that's hard to buy into, actually going down, but I think it just such a gross situation in Houston, and I feel bad for Deshaun Watson.
I agree. on paper, the Caserio hire is okay, I guess. He's just another Patriot guy, but they've been trying to get him for so long too, right?
I know.
But no, because of the Watson situation. But as long as he's involved in the hiring of the head coach, I think all this will go away. To be honest,
I think. The Patton one's really solid.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Holmes one's the one that, again, interests me the most because I think it's the biggest swing.
Yeah, no, definitely.
By far the most upside. and all the things, like, even outside of scouting, that he was huge for their kind of the building, the analytics, their culture, and
no,
like outside of football.
Okay, yeah.
The kind of dealing with social justice, all that stuff. He was, and that's something I think Detroit Lions need, like a real leader in the front office. So that's why I'm pretty jazzed up about the Brad Holmes hire.
It's an interesting point. Like the Lions never felt that connected to Detroit, like as connected as they should be. You know what I mean?
They
kind of feel like they're just there. Like,
yes.
Even though you know, Detroit, the Ford family owns, like, it's already, but yes. It just never felt like a real connect between the city and the friend. And I might be wrong, but we're I don't know, 250 kilometers away.
I think
you're
right. And I think Detroit's actually a very, very cool city. And if the, like, just having the right people in that front office, and hopefully Brad Holmes hires the right guy as head coach, I think this is a really nice move. But I also do think it signals the full rebuild. And that starts with maybe moving Stafford.
I saw an interesting anecdote about Brad Holmes, and yeah, like I kind of tried to jump the gun on. He's apparently a big analytics guy there in LA, and I don't know if this is a big deal, but apparently when he went off the Senior Bowl, like next gen stats, like individual guys' speed, like, you know, running speed, as opposed to the 40, and that's kind of what. Like, I don't know. I don't even know if this is true, but they landed on, they weren't worried about the Cooper Kupp 4.6 flat or whatever it was. That, I mean, you shouldn't have been anyways, because his Senior Bowl speed was way more impressive, which, like, you could probably do with the eye test, but still, that's a hopeful thing to hear. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he's like, again, I just find his hire by far the most interesting. He's also quite young. He's only 41. Mm-hmm. He's been the director of college scouting for a handful of years now. They've obviously he's been a big piece to. Remember when Les Snead, like before Sean McVay was there, Les Snead was
so
felt
close.
Like he was going to get fired all the time. Yeah. And like I think they've done a really good job, or Les Snead has done a really good job of getting the right people around him and fully turning around the Rams thing.
No one saved his own ass more than Les Snead has, and it's not talked about too often. I guess it was years ago, but now it's kind of like, yeah, he's a good GM. Go ahead.
And then obviously Fitter is your guy from Seattle, and his name comes up, I feel like, every year.
For the last, like, three years now.
Yeah, and finally go. And I'm sure you know more about him than I do. I just kind of trust what the Panthers have started to build since Tepper became owner and Matt Rhule took over as head coach. So this feels like a good move. I don't think it would happen unless Tepper and Rhule were on the same page with it. So I think, and obviously coming from one of the most successful franchises of the last decade, so I think it's a cool one.
Yeah, like, and he was with the Seahawks well before Pete Carroll. He's been there since 2001.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, long time there. And, I mean, everything says he's good. It's kind of funny. You don't see him too much. Like, it's mainly when it's so much, you know, Pete Carroll and John Schneider just kind of dominate the front, like the scene there. I mean, he's been up for so many of these gigs. The interesting thing was, though, that it seemed like he came out of nowhere in this search, because they hired a bunch of, they interviewed a bunch of candidates, I think like 15. And
I honestly didn't think he would leave Seattle, and I didn't realize he was the leader in the office. I thought Adam Peters from San Francisco was going to
get the job. Yeah, I came out of nowhere, and like technically hasn't been hired yet. They just announced that they offered him the job, but if you do that, it means he's hired. You want a fun fact about Scott Fitterer?
Yes.
He was a minor league pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, and quick trivia, Rob, who else played for the Jays then became a GM in another sport?
In another sport?
Yes. Not a,
like, not football either?
Yes, also not football, but I meant not baseball.
What's his name?
Danny Ainge.
Celtics.
You know it.
I couldn't think of his name. I know. Trader Danny.
There you go. Hey, Danny Ainge has been good, so maybe that's a good sign for old Scott in Carolina.
We'll come back. We'll do a show probably where we go through all the head coaching, staff hirings, and GMs, and we'll grade them then. But I'm just going to tell you who the biggest winner is, okay?
Okay.
From this batch, the Pittsburgh Steelers, because they didn't lose Omar Khan, and he's the future GM.
There you go. Big winner. And who's left? I mean, the Falcons apparently have zeroed in on Terry Fontenot, but it's not official.
Which,
yeah,
I think he's the best hire. If that was official and we were talking about it right now, I would say he's the best hire. I'm very excited.
another guy
for him just, to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, another guy just long time to his franchise. Then who is it? Yes. It's Washington and Jacksonville, and then obviously Urban Meyer's got all
16 years under Loomis in New Orleans,
mm-hmm. and 6 years as director of pro scouting there. Speaking of Jacksonville,
yeah. Urban Meyer, officially the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, just two-ish years after saying he probably will never coach again.
I feel like we've heard that before from Urban Meyer.
Yeah. Obviously, no matter what happens in the rest of the head coaching searches, this is the biggest, splashiest one. Three national championships at Ohio State and Florida. 187-32 in his college coaching career between Ohio State, Florida, Utah, and Bowling Green. Put numerous guys into the NFL. Transformed Ohio State from being a top 10 team into a top 3 team. Ridiculous coaching tree. One of the 10 best college coaches in college football history, I would say.
Yeah.
Zero experience in the NFL. Has never coached any capacity in the NFL. Lots of whispers of who he's going to bring with him to fill out his staff.
It's the most interesting part, yeah.
Yes, by far. Because, Urban Meyer is, again, one of the greatest college coaches of all time. But with the zero NFL experience, and to me, the best thing he did as a coach was combo of recruiting and building a culture, which is in player development, which is less important at the NFL level.
Yeah, and to his credit, he always had a really strong staff around him, though.
Yes, which is, to me, that's one of the most underrated things about being a head coach in the NFL is surrounding yourself with the right people. I mean, you look at what Andy Reid's coaching tree. That's, he just keeps hiring the right people and developing the right coaches. So, like you said, it's going to be super interesting to see who fills out his staff. Rumors of Charlie Strong as a defensive coordinator. Rumors of Chris Ash as DB coach. Just like right now, sounding like it's going to happen. Scott Linehan as his offensive coordinator, which I think is kind of boring. But
it's boring, but at least it's a guy that's had NFL experience and NFL head coach experience.
A ton of NFL experience, and I think that's kind of...
So I don't. It's boring, but I don't hate it.
And, filling out the staff's going to be really interesting. Seeing who they hire as GM, because to me, when you're hiring a head coach and a GM, whoever you hire first is the real in-charge person.
Pretty much, yeah.
And Shad Khan said at the end of the day, he's still going to have final say on personnel decisions, which is... I will never understand why some owners do that, because they have zero experience as... In football, they built a business that has nothing to do with football, made billions, bought a team, and now they want to have the final say over someone who grinded in the league for decades to become a GM. But whatever. So I'm excited to see who they hire as GM to pair with Urban Meyer and who he fills out the staff with. We'll grade it when it's all said and done, because it's too hard to say. At the end of the day, though, it's very exciting that he's making that leap. I mean, it's cooler than hiring Doug Murrow.
Yeah, definitely. 100% agree.
Doug Marone went 25-25 at Syracuse. So
that was such a weird one. Like that, I don't know. That was his.
Remember? Then he took the Bills' job. Then he was like, I don't want to do this. Became the Jaguars' O-line coach, and then set himself up to become a head coach. So weird.
We got to give it to him. He's a genius that he turned that record into two head coaching jobs. The only cool thing about the Bills gig was that he was geographically close. Like, I'm like, this is a weird hire.
Yeah, no, that was cool. That was cool.
But, like, coming across upstate, that's cool. But anyways, yeah.
Well, so, okay, before we move on to our all-rookie team, final thing. Where do you want Doug Marone to go next?
I don't know.
Keep in mind, born and raised in the Bronx, played at Syracuse, then became head coach at Syracuse, and then whatever happened since. What say you?
I want him to go back to Syracuse and end up as the head coach again in the future, like he pulled off in Jacksonville.
I would not be surprised if like Dino Babers is like, yeah, I should bring this guy. Like he is, because he is a good offensive line coach.
Yeah,
I should bring him in as my offensive line coach plus tons of experience. And then he tricks him, and then he's the head coach a year later.
King Doug. That's what we're gonna call him from now on.
I think he'd just be perfect for the Mac.
He would be a great Mac coach. Yeah, I totally agree. Oh, maybe he takes the analyst job from Urban Meyer on Fox.
Yeah, that's what the people want.
They gotta find someone.
Okay. Urban Meyer carried that show. I don't know what's gonna happen now.
I don't know. I saw Mark Helfrich's name floated, which is a good one, but the name's not buzzy enough.
I don't think he's like, I like Mark Helfrich in the booth because he's very X's and O's, but I don't think he's like personality enough. Like he's very
dry
and even keel. I don't even think he'd be like a great like top commentator guy. I just like him.
Fair enough. Yeah, like I enjoyed him. Yeah.
Fox, give Doug a call. Okay, let's do our all-rookie team. Okay.
Sigh.
Offense. I hate the NFL.
Okay, sorry.
I just want to talk about Doug Marone to the Mac.
It should happen. You're right. Anyways, okay, quarterback. Come on, this is easy.
Quarterback, Justin Herbert. Threw for over 4,000 yards. Set the NFL rookie touchdown record with 31. Completed 66.6. Ran for 5 touchdowns. The Chargers head coaching job's like the diamond job because of him.
And apparently it's they're circling in on Brian Daboll, which is exciting for
which
us.
Which is our number one.
Oh yeah. This is a slam dunk first team quarterback.
We
might as well talk about it now. Offensive rookie of the year. I'm a coin toss right now between him and Justin Jefferson.
Well, which again is fair because Justin, like, although Herbert broke like all the rookie passing records, Jefferson broke the yard record.
I would not care who wins it. Like, I'm happy either way.
Yeah, I think Justin Jefferson ultimately was the more dominant player.
Yep.
But the difference just being quarterback is the more important position. Like, if their positions were weighed equally, I think it would be Justin Jefferson.
I agree. And still closely, though, but definitely he was, like...
Yeah.
So many 100-yard games that I was just like, all right, another one from Justin Jefferson. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yes. Justin Herbert was such a fun part of this bizarre season. Yep. The way he came in, took over, and just instantly became one of the most aggressive passers in the league. Despite horrible offensive line play, and he quickly became one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch.
100%, yeah. Bad offensive line play, not much of a running game. Bad coaching decisions around him, and he did all of this. So the future is insanely bright for Justin Herbert.
And all I want is Brian Daboll.
Me too.
I also think people forget Brian Daboll was the OC when Alabama beat Georgia in the Natty.
You know what? I saw some headlines about like how Brian Daboll's kind of out of nowhere, and I'm like, I don't think that's fair. Like, when Buffalo hired Brian Daboll, we were both super optimistic about that hire. And I mean, it's not just because he was born in Welland, Ontario, but geographical.
Well,
that was
it for me.
But no, he had a good resume going in, and
he was a lifetime Belichick guy, yep. And then worked for Nick Saban.
Yeah, that's usually a good recipe.
And apparently he's just like the best, like most energizy, kind of one of those flamboyantly energized coaches.
Moving to running back. Okay, first of all, are we doing one running back like we usually do because we hate running backs, or is this the year that we give two running backs a spot?
No, the way I did it was how I would generally what I would call starting offense, which is one quarterback, one running back, three receivers, five linemen.
I also did the same thing, but I was just wondering because there's two running backs.
You can you can run the wishbone. I don't care how you run your offense.
No, I built it the same as you, same as we did last year. If anyone remembers,
because of the way he finished the season, I had to go with Jonathan Taylor.
I also did it. Narrowly over my favorite player in the world, James Robinson, who had a spectacular year. But yeah, no.
Undrafted rookie of the year.
Yeah, 100%. But exactly. On a playoff team, being a dominant monster down the stretch, leading rookies in rushing, what, third amongst all players in rushing yards, 11 touchdowns. It had to be Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, he was a different, like, I was very hard on him early in the season. I mean, like, two episodes ago, I wouldn't stop talking about him. But the way he finished the season, he was just, he was a different running back. His lateral agility, his burst, his vision was so much better. He was consistently bringing that. He just looked comfortable, and you were no longer worried about his kind of fumbly problems.
Remember earlier in the year when, like, it'd be third and one, and it's like, okay, you know the ball's going to Jonathan Taylor because that's what you drafted him for. But he had zero confidence that he was going to pick it up. And then suddenly that turned into him breaking those runs. And what an amazing halfway through the rookie season transformation that I don't know if I remember for an offensive skill position guy just breaking through the wall like that.
Yeah, no, like, he turned into one of the best backs in the league. Like, I don't think there's very many young or very many backs who would take over him in general going forward.
Definitely. And, like, all the preseason talk was like, okay, this is a perfect fit. You know, he's going to rush for 1,200 yards. And then week six, you're like, okay, we fucked up. And then, hey, he came around and he was only 31 yards short. So,
bam. And obviously, like you said, James Robinson. I thought two other backs to mention. If Antonio Gibson didn't get banged up.
Yep.
Like, at one point, he had, what, like 11 touchdowns in like nine games or something. And then if J.K. Dobbins was just given the load, I think it would have been a big, big difference for him. Like, I think he averaged the most per carry among these guys, at least at six. And I feel like he's going to be everyone's pick to be the breakout Pro Bowl running back next year.
Yeah, that's an easy one. If we were doing, like many people do, is the flex position, I would have given that to Antonio Gibson.
Yeah, that's fair. It's funny because early on, it looked like Clyde Edwards-Helaire would have run away with this spot, eh?
Yeah, I know. And we talked about it last week. Just it turned into a really, really good rookie year for running backs.
Yep. Like, yeah. We mentioned DeAndre Swift. Like, very strong group. Stronger group, though.
Yeah.
The wide receivers, where obviously Justin Jefferson is going to be our number one.
Correct.
88 grabs, 1,400 yards, 7 touchdowns. Maybe the offensive rookie of the year. Only one of two rookies to make the Pro Bowl. The rare trade that worked out for both sides with him and Stephon Diggs. He looks like he's already one of the most complete receivers in the league. He's not just that big, kind of larger slot with the route running. He can line up in anywhere and he can beat you anyway.
Yeah.
He was so fun to watch. He's already, like, I think he's gonna be one of the just. For the next 10 years, one of the 10 best receivers.
I know, right? It's just his game is just so complete already, which is remarkable. And I don't know. Like, there's nothing really to nitpick him his rookie year on. It was just a dominant performance week in, week out.
Yeah, it's not even interesting. The more interesting spot is the wide receiver 2 and 3.
I know. Here, I'm going to let you take the reins here because I wonder where you went.
So, I think for me, without question, my number 2 receiver, CeeDee Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Still managed 74 grabs, 935 yards, despite Dak going down.
Yep.
Also had that onside kick return.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah.
we saw flashes of what he can do, especially when Dak was there. He kind of had a lull mid season, and then as the offense kind of came back together, he started making plays again. He remember that one incredible touchdown grab he had.
One of my favorite of the year.
Who was it against? I can't remember, but just the nastiest one-handed touchdown. He looks like he's gets to be one of the best number 2 receivers in the league next year, even number 3 receivers because they got Gallup and Amari
Cooper. Yeah, and speaking of, he lined up in the slot a lot this year, which...
Yeah, no. If you were going to go on, like, and actually be like, you have to pick it. If you're going to Peter King this up and be like, this slot has to actually be a true slot, like, he fits that because that's basically where he just played.
We did that last year, by the way. So I slotted him in at slot. So.
Okay, respect. You, me, and Peter King, eh?
Yeah.
You voted Cole Beasley to the All-Pro
team? Yeah, my first team All-Pro because that's how I'd build my team. No, Jefferson and Lamb were the easy guys. And I put him at slot. So, I don't know, like he had such a great rookie year, and it feels like it's just going to get overlooked a bit, and rightfully because Justin Jefferson was so insane and the team sucked. But no,
but yeah, it's still like it's crazy. He 935 yards as a rookie with your backup quarterback for half the year. Like it, that's a ridiculous season
with all those mouths to feed on the team too. Yeah, it's insane. Yes. So here, Lamb was the easy one. The third receiver, if you will, I thought was the difficult one. I gave it to your guy Chase Claypool.
I didn't.
Okay, who'd you go with?
I went with T. Higgins.
He was my runner-up. Okay, I think you can basically flip a coin there. I ended up going with Claypool because, one, I guess you can give him the playoff team bump. And two, just the stretch of dominance. I mean, yeah, the Steelers' offense sputtered many times. And so did he. But just, you know, what do you have? 62 catches, 873 yards, 9 touchdowns, plus 2 rushing touchdowns. His receiving stats were slightly below Higgins, not the touchdowns. I gave it to him just because of the stretch of kind of dominance that he had.
Yeah, I was going to say, basically to me, the argument was bigger games versus more consistency. Yeah. I went with consistency, picking T. Higgins. I thought Claypool had games where, especially early, where he, like you said, the dominance, and then as the Steelers' offense struggled, he just completely disappeared for stretches. Versus T. Higgins just consistently was the kind of the go-to guy, even once Joe Burrow went down, who we didn't even mention is obviously, I think, the honorable mention all-rookie quarterback. Higgins was still the go-to guy. He was much better than A.J. Green every time he threw on a Bengals game. Yeah. Like, he looks like the future number one outside guy to Tyler Boyd on the inside. And him and Burrow had good chemistry, but the fact that he was still able to put up numbers with Ryan Finley and with Brandon Allen, that's kind of why I ended up going with Higgins.
I think that's fair. It's really just a flip of the coin, and yeah. I gave it to the touchdowns and the dominant stretches over the consistency.
Fair. I put two honorable mentions. I put Jerry Jeudy and Brandon Ayuk.
I think if I had a fifth guy, I would have went with Ayuk. And, yeah, maybe Jeudy a bit of a step below the rest of the group. But, again,
if you – like, I think Jerry Jeudy had a really good year aside from the drops.
Yeah, he did. And
which is what pulls him down.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, obviously. The team stunk, too. And no, I totally agree.
I think you'd mentioned – I don't know how long ago, but – Brandon Ayuk just quietly had a really nice season, especially, again, another guy who's playing with backup quarterback.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think people would be surprised to look back on his stats. I don't have them in front of me, but they were.
I do.
Go ahead.
He had 825 yards from scrimmage and 7 total touchdowns.
It's good. 60 catches. Yeah, that's impressive. Good, great year.
12 games only, too.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And like you said, with Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard throwing him the ball most of the time.
Okay, offensive line, I might have cheated slightly.
Okay, I want to hear how, because I cheated slightly as well.
I didn't want to put a center.
Oh, okay. I respect that decision totally. I end up throwing a center, but I don't care. Because
the centers that played were really bad.
Yeah.
I was like, my logic was, rather than reward a guy like Lloyd Cushenberry, who I think had a really poor season, but played center all year.
Yeah,
I would rather spotlight another interior lineman who happened to play guard, who was actually good.
See, and to be fair, so if I had to choose a center, it would be Lloyd Cushenberry because he played every snap this year. But also, to be fair, the interior offensive line was meh overall, anyways, but just really bad at center.
I cheated again.
Okay,
technically, Michael Onwenu spent more time at tackle.
This is my cheat. This is my cheat.
Okay, but did you put him at guard?
I put him at guard. Yeah, I mean, look.
Because I wasn't going to not
have him on the team.
He had one of the most surprisingly great seasons.
Yep.
And was forced to play all over the offensive line.
Yep.
He was by far at his best as a guard, but had to finish the season as a right tackle, which he wasn't as good, but he was still so much better than most guys.
I know.
And like, his position going forward is he's going to be starting guard.
Exactly. And honestly, like, I know the tackle class was really good. If someone had him as a starting tackle on your all-rookie team, I wouldn't even give you too much shit for it, because he was that good. And, yeah, I just didn't want to leave him off the team. And when he was at guard, he was the best rookie guard, so I put him at guard.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's why it felt silly to They're like, well, he's an honorable mention because
no.
he wasn't one of the two best tackles, but when he was guard, he was the best guard.
Who else did you put on the interior? No, I totally agree. He just deserved to be on it. I don't care. I'd fudge it a bit.
So I put three guards for my interior spots because, yeah, not going to put Lloyd Cushenberry. So I put on Wenyu. I put Jonah Jackson with the Lions, and I put Damian Lewis with the Seahawks.
Those are my three offensive guards. So
I think it's the right three, and the only honorable mention I put was Solomon Kindley with the Dolphins.
Yeah, so for me, I put Onwenu and Damian Lewis, and then very tight, I put Jonah Jackson after him. But I put Jonah Jackson over Cushenberry, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's our three interior line. Damian Lewis looks like the perfect fit for Seattle, especially because they're going to run the ball more when they hire a new OC.
Hey, and Russell can see over him. He's only 6'2", so there you go.
Exactly. He is one hell of a mauler. If you want to see someone pancake block people, that's the guy to watch. He also got better in pass protection.
The penalty stopped too. Like,
and when he wasn't playing center, that helped.
Yeah, I think he only gave up like three sacks, which isn't like it's not bad at all. And one of them was at center. I know that for sure. So, run mauler.
Yeah, and everyone's getting excited because of how big Deontay Brown looked in the natty. And, like, the guy that everyone's like, if you want your Damian Lewis, you go get Deontay Brown. So he's already getting comps. And then with Jonah Jackson, he just, I think, quietly was just consistently solid. Like, he just played like a starting guard.
Yep.
He didn't really stand out necessarily because he wasn't making mistakes. You saw him maul a couple people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, we got a Michigan lineman on here, so we got to get an Ohio State lineman.
Yeah.
Who's technically a Rutgers lineman.
That's the best part of it.
Yes. So, yeah, I think clearly those are the three best guys. Solomon Kindley, I thought, probably halfway through the year I would have had him on this. But he struggled down the stretch as the whole offensive line did.
Yeah.
He struggled more in pass protection. But he too, looks like a tone setter and starting long-term guard.
No. I think we mentioned it throughout the season that there's so many of those just big mauling guards this class. And none of them went super high. And, I mean, hey, even at tackle, too. But none of them went, like, super high on the interior. And they all kind of just shone this year.
Don't draft guards in the first round? Is that what you're saying?
No, I draft more guards in the first round, baby. Those guys should have been first round picks. That's what I'm saying.
If you played in the Big Ten or at LSU, but I guess just the Big Ten and SEC.
Yeah, it's fine. Big Ten, SEC. Just that's where you're finding your.
You're probably going to be sick.
Exactly. Hey, and my tackles are Big Ten and SEC too. So.
Oh, okay. Mine aren't.
Okay.
Well, one of them.
Tristan Wirfs, I think, is the no doubt slam dunk.
Like, if you were to ignore the fact that he plays line and doesn't have stats, Justin Herbert, Justin Jefferson, and Tristan Wirfs were, to me, not even close, the three best rookies.
Run away,
Like, I'm here for arguing Tristan Wirfs to win Rookie of the Year.
Like,
that's how good he was. He should have made the Pro Bowl. He should have been a first-team All-Pro. Mm-hmm. Like, he was that good. He's already one of the five best offensive tackles in the NFL this season. He was transformative in helping that offense. Like, obviously, their interior is very experienced. In that. Like, Ali Marpet's a Pro Bowler. Ryan Jensen's a Pro Bowler as well. And, I mean, Alex Kappa. Come on. We love Alex Kappa.
Imagine how angry – this is just off topic a little bit, but we do love Alex Kappa. Imagine how angry we'd be sitting here right now if Justin Jefferson and Justin Herbert didn't have the seasons they had. And, like, I don't know, Jonathan Taylor won Offensive Rookie of the Year over Tristan Wirfs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would make me so.
Which would have probably happened. So thank you, Herbert 100%. And Jefferson. Like, he allowed like one sack. He was barely penalized.
He was dominant,
and he was the like again. I think I said it a couple weeks ago. The most important draft pick on the offense for sure this year.
Yeah, he's ridiculously talented. We knew he's a freak athlete, and he's such a physical run blocker, and. His I don't know, the ace up his sleeve in pass protection is his balance through contact. It's ridiculous for a big boy.
Definitely. And so, like, that was a lock. OT2 was really interesting to me. I put it a toss-up, but who'd you give it to?
I give it to Mekhi Becton.
I give it to Jedrick Wills, and I know. Fine going either direction.
So, for me, like, obviously, it's a close battle. But I went with Becton just because despite all the shit around him, he was the best player in the Jets offense. He was the most dominant player in the Jets offense. He was like, if you're going to watch a Jets offensive game, he's the guy you watch. Yeah. Just because of the way he bullied people. And just when he was healthy, he was just such a physically dominant player. And it was from like week one and on. Jedrick Wills, I think, struggled in pass protection down the stretch. They both had their struggles in pass protection. Mm-hmm. But I think Becton was the more dominant run blocker, and Wills also had a lot more positives going on around him. So that's kind of how I broke that tie.
No, that's fair. And yeah, both glass eaters and maulers in the run. And I think I broke the tie where, and you can make it both ways, this argument, but where Becton was on the one of the worst teams in the NFL, obviously, with shit around him. Wills had the things around him, but he was also an integral part on a playoff team with one of the best rushing attacks, and I think was the best offensive line in the league this year. So I flipped it around and went that way, and I don't care who actually would be our offensive tackle because they're both so deserving of it.
Yeah, and Wyatt Teller was a hit for us as well. That's 3 years later.
The most importantly, correct.
It's like the best guard in the NFL now. I don't even think he made the Pro Bowl. Nothing makes sense. Who's voting?
I don't know.
Strangers and fans. But you know what, AJ?
I don't know what. Enlighten me.
James Harden joined the Brooklyn Nets.
What?
Last night, Mac McClung hit a buzzer beater against Texas.
His foot was on the line.
Basketball is back. And with basketball comes gambling. Because that makes it more fun to watch.
It does.
And with gambling comes needing a sports book. And with COVID comes needing an online sports book. And with all of that comes Bet Online. Where you can go and you can gamble. Plus NFL playoffs. Plus when the Super Bowl comes around, all the prop bets. Bet Online's got everything you need to make money and bet online. And if you use promo code Armchair, you can take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And why wouldn't you want to do that?
No reason.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
So let's get to our NFL All-Rookie defense now. I mentioned Jefferson was one of two Pro Bowlers in the rookie class. The other was Chase Young, who is, I'm assuming, both of our number one edges here.
Of course, yeah.
10 TFLs, 7.5 sacks, scored touchdown, was a dominant force who outplayed his box score all season long. Yep. Looks like one of the best pass rushers in the league. And yeah, just one of the most well-rounded players in the league already on the defensive line.
Definitely. And I've mentioned this a couple times, but he felt like he was coming up big in big spots, like lots of big goal line TFLs, lots of big, like, fourth and third and short TFLs, and just crashing down the line and eating guys. And I mean, the stats speak for themselves. And even outside of that, like you said, dominant outside of the stat box as well.
I love Chase Young. He's everything that he was advertised as. And a cornerstone for helping transform Washington into a playoff team and getting Ron Rivera's team trending in the right direction. That defense is so fun, that defensive line specifically. You've got four monsters between Young, Sweat, Allen, and Payne.
Yeah.
And they're all from the SEC or Ohio State.
I'm proud of you as you're an SEC and Ohio State fan.
Thank you.
Now, the question is, Edge 2. I struggled. I don't know who'd you end up landing on?
I think it was undoubtedly Alex Highsmith.
Okay, undoubtedly, and that was all down the stretch. You know,
yes,
I gave it to DJ Wonnum with zero conviction.
Well, Alex Highsmith ate your first team all rookie tackle alive. I think he had two outside of Chase, like excluding Chase Young games. Alex Highsmith had the two best or most dominant games from an edge rusher, rookie edge rusher. The numbers aren't like just two sacks, pick, five TFLs, but he replaced a Pro Bowl level player in Bud Dupree, mm-hmm. who's going to get paid millions and millions, and like Pittsburgh is just going to let him walk now because that's how good Alex Highsmith looked.
Hey, he wasn't without his bumps games, like we talked about that.
Just the Bengals game,
yeah. Just the Bengals game, but yeah, no. I think just the fact that, I don't know, I have zero conviction of who the second guy should be is an indictment of how poor this group was. I mean,
you're sleeping on Alex Highsmith. He was not poor.
Yeah, but, like, well, he wasn't poor, but the group was overall. That's what I'm saying.
But.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dalton Robinson.
Dalton Robinson, runner-up for me as well. Highsmith, Robinson, Wonnum, and Young are the only four I'd even really consider.
Another thing to mention, Alton Robinson, Syracuse, Doug Marone, Syracuse.
let me go DJ Wonnum a little bit. It felt like all of it, he only had three sacks, too. Like, there was not much production here. But all of them felt like in big spots. He had that big strip sack. I think it was Aaron Rodgers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think, like, and he missed some time as well. But when he was on the field, I thought, like, they got a good edge, too, there with DJ Wonnum. And I like the potential there. Highsmith, yeah, the highs were definitely the highest amongst this trio of whatevers.
I also think coming out of this rookie class, the only clear starters on the edge entering year two are Young and Highsmith.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they'll get the gig. Alton Robinson's going to always be in the rotation there in Seattle. I mean, even if they somehow get worse.
Darrell Taylor's coming for his job.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, he wasn't even getting starter minutes. He just came up big, like, when he got the chance. I think Wonnum will be starting, though.
I don't, because I think they're going to draft a pass rusher, and they've got Daniel Hunter coming back.
True. We'll see. I think he was good enough. But, yeah, good in the rotation regardless.
Interior defensive line. Also not super exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
I think default you have to put Derrick Brown.
I did. Yeah.
He was the splashiest player on the interior, and I don't think he had a great year. I don't think he had a bad year.
It took a long time to come on, though.
He had his best games against some of the poorer offensive lines the Panthers played, but
true.
I guess he ended up being a pretty impactful run defender. I just think the issue is more you can't take a guy that early who's not going to be a premier pass rusher on the defensive line. But he at least is going to be, I think, a very solid starter going forward. 8 TFLs, 2 sacks, like just a solid season.
Yeah, finishing with 8 TFLs is good. And yeah, it took a bit to come on, and then down the stretch he was really solid. So he felt like the easy one. IDL2 was the big toss up for me. I'm sure most people have Javon Kinlaw here, who I don't either. But I wouldn't give you any guff over. I went with Raekwon Davis.
Okay, I did too, and I think I agree with you where I think you can argue either. I went with Raekwon Davis, although he like has a very minimal impact on passing downs.
Yeah.
He looks like a long-term starting nose tackle who's going to be a really great run defender.
Exactly. It's for what he did as a run defender, 40 tackles on the year. That's a good number. And also just like outside of the box score, if you watch some of those games for the Dolphins,
it clogs it.
Yeah, he's just controlling the middle of the field, and that's what you want out of
big.
Yeah, with a big long run defender and just eating the middle there, and
then obviously the argument for Kinlaw is there's more splashy plays, there's more pass rush for sure. Like he had a really great game against I think the Saints. And there was a couple plays where like he'd shoot a gap and almost make the play, and more flashy for sure. And I think he's gonna be like, I think Raekwon Davis is gonna be a very solid starter. But Kinlaw looked like he's got way more upside.
Definitely.
But Raekwon Davis ultimately I thought was the more impactful player.
Yeah, I agree. Flashier from Kinlaw, but more impactful from Davis. And a fourth spot would have been our guy Devon Hamilton.
Yeah, I think if Devon Hamilton didn't miss time, I probably would have ended up giving this spot to him.
Oh, I think that's fair. Over Raekwon Davis. But
yeah.
Or at least would have been really, really tight between the three. Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, moving to off ball linebacker. I have just two because I play nickel like a man.
I put two as well.
Okay. Again, without question, to me, without question, the two kind of like I think you like Jeremy Chinn should be listed as a linebacker, so I listed him as a linebacker. So I think without question, my two linebackers are Patrick Queen and Jeremy Chinn.
Okay, so Patrick Queen, clearly. What I ended up doing was I didn't go with a nickel. I went with two linebackers, and even though LB2 doesn't really deserve it. And I put Jeremy Chinn as my flex.
Instead of a nickel? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, instead of a nickel.
Okay, that's got you. So you have him. Ultimately, of course. He is on your team.
100%, yep.
Okay, starting with Queen, he had his ups and downs, especially in coverage, but was not even close. If you don't call Jeremy Chinn a linebacker, it's not even close. Patrick Queen was the most impactful linebacker.
Yeah.
In a class where a lot of guys let people down, I think, obviously, you have to call Queen's rookie season a success. There was, again, some struggles. I remember the Chiefs game was a tough one for him against Clyde Edwards-Helaire in coverage. But he was also such a sideline-to-sideline player. Had some really big games where he was just eating people alive in the backfield because he's such a freaky athlete, and he just he looks like he's just gonna start for them, and he looked like he had Pro Bowl upside, like a Devin Whitey ish in terms of just how freaky he can be with his athleticism as a explosive downhill playmaker.
Yeah, and that's not like a simple defense there in Baltimore. It's gonna take him some time, and we saw that, like, you know, a bit hesitant at times, but the athleticism made up for that often. It got a little bit lost in coverage at times, but again, the athleticism. But yeah, on top of it, the monster flash plays, taking over games in small spurts. And then the numbers also, like 106 tackles, 9 TFLs, 3 sacks, a pick.
Was a really nice blitzer when they brought it.
Yeah, he was. So easily, if you don't consider Chinn a linebacker, he is by far LB1 on this team.
And then with Chinn, I mean,
led all defensive rookies in tackles.
Yes. If you're ranked defensive rookie of the year, I think he would be second for me after Chase Young.
Yeah.
He was literally everywhere for that defense. He looked like their first round pick. He, when they blitzed him, he was so impactful. And again, he played linebacker some games. He played safety other games. he had that game where he had 2 touchdowns.
Yep.
Like, he just, he 6'3", 225, and flying around like that. It was insane how dominant he ended up looking.
Yeah, definitely. And it was from the get-go. Like, remember week one, he didn't have, like, the greatest game, but it's like he just kept flashing because he was flying all around the field.
He was cleaning up everything. Yeah. Like, he was in everywhere.
Yeah, and he had 117 tackles. Definitely. Like, if you're just going to go linebackers like that, it's those two guys, clearly. I ended up flexing them, and even though an LB2 didn't really deserve it, okay, Kenneth Murray, what, had 106 tackles and a sack. But
Kenneth Murray's bad.
Yeah, I went with the eye test. He wasn't great. I gave LB2 to Jordan Brooks because I don't think...
That would have... My honorable mentions are Jordan Brooks and Chris Barnes with the Packers.
that's fair. My honorable mentions are Murray and Barnes. And yeah, I went with the eye test, and even though, you know, he was just a situational guy for the Seahawks, still have...
He was, go ahead. Like, yeah. He showed more to me. Like, he has a brighter future to me from what I saw from him than what I saw from Kenneth Murray.
Absolutely, 100%. 57 tackles and really came on down the stretch, too. So, I yeah, exactly. That's why I give him the nod.
No, I think that's totally fair. Moving to defensive back, let's start with... I did 2 corners and a nickel, and I guess technically your nickel's Chin, so I'll just go ahead and say mine is Antoine Winfield Jr.
Oh, okay, so I got Winfield Jr. at safety. Kept it traditional.
I thought the rookie safety class ended up being pretty strong.
Yeah.
And I thought the best way to cheat and make sure I get more of them in is put Winfield Jr. at nickel.
That's fair.
And I felt justified in putting him there, probably similarly to why you felt justified putting Chin as the flexes, because they do multiple things. Like, Winfield Jr., here comes the Winfield Jr. train. Like, Todd Bowles early in the season was blitzing him a lot, and he was so impactful that way.
3 sacks.
He was solid in coverage. He wasn't terrific in coverage, but solid in coverage.
Yep.
And just an animal as a run defender like his dad. I think without question he is on the all-rookie defense wherever you want to put him.
100%. And, like, if you're just going to do traditional safety, he's safety one for me. Easily.
Yes. Cool. Yes.
So I like that cheat because, you know what, the one reason I'm like, you know, I'm going to go flex, just stick a linebacker, was because none of the corners, like none of the guys who played nickel too much weren't too great, like as corners, you know? So I like that.
I don't know, Troy Pride fell down and crawled on the ground and made our fucking year.
that's good. Honestly, he should be on our team just out of fucking respect. So corner ended up being a bit of a hotly contested, maybe not hotly, but a well contested team for me. I'll get it started. My first corner is Legarius Sneed, who obviously missed 6 yes. games in the middle of the year, and then week 17 on top of it. But when he was on the field, I don't think there was a better rookie corner because he was impactful as fuck for those Kansas City Chiefs.
I think to me the 2 corners were obvious.
Okay, I see. Corner 2 was a toss up for me.
One being Sneed because I thought he was the most impactful player.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think any corner, partially because Sneed missed so much time, any corner was more consistently looked like he should be starting in the NFL than Jalen Johnson.
Jalen Johnson was my second choice, but he was my other corner. So yes. Sneed and Johnson were my guys.
Which are mine as well.
Terrell was close for me, though, with Johnson.
Terrell was my honorable mention.
Yeah, and I think those are the three clear guys.
No one else is in the conversation.
No, not really at all. And quickly going back to Sneedy, he started off hot with the picks, then missed the time. And then down the stretch, they started blitzing him more. And he played a lot both at nickel and corner, too. So you could have even fudged it that way. But no, definitely an amazing year. And you felt his absence on the Kansas City Chiefs defense, too.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So
he was a ball magnet.
Yeah, no, for real. And making the transition from safety to corner and coming out of Louisiana Tech and being a day three guy. He deserves all the credit in the world for the season he had, even with the missed games.
And then Jalen Johnson obviously had a really strong start to the season.
Mm-hmm.
Had some tougher games, kind of hit a rookie wall for a bit. And then I thought he was solid down the stretch.
And then missed the last, two, three games for them, too. So that,
3 games, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And broke up a ton. He broke up 15 passes.
Best amongst all rookies, yeah.
Yeah, and he just, like, He was a day one starter and just like kind of seamlessly fit in. And,
yep. On a playoff defense too, give him credit for that.
Yes, yeah, one of the best defenses in the league. The AJ Terrell, I thought, was more inconsistent, and that's why I give it Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, it's kind of opposite, where Johnson started really hot and then fizzled a little bit, where Terrell started cold and then missed time with COVID and then came back, and it was pretty awesome since then. Definitely those three guys, though. If Snead is the clear guy, and if you give it to Johnson or Terrell, I wouldn't care. But the past breakups being the best amongst rookies, I had to give the nod to Johnson. And plus, like you said, also for content, we talked about Jalen Johnson so much. So I kind of sometimes when there was a toss up, I went that way. Like with Raekwon Davis, we talked about him. He had the monster games. He was defensive rookie of the week for us a couple times. That's how we kind of broke some of these ties.
Safety, really good group,
mm-hmm.
especially if you count Chin and Antoine Winfield Jr. towards it.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up putting, to me, it came down to three guys for two spots. I ended up putting Cameron Curl and Julian Blackman with Jordan Fuller as my honorable mention.
Okay, so I agree that those are the top two, and then Fuller. So I went with Winfield as my number one safety.
Right.
Tough call between Blackman and Curl for me. I gave the nod to Blackman. So I'm curious, if you had to pick one of the two,
I would take Cameron Curl.
Okay. Close or easily?
Close. No, definitely close.
The stats go Cameron Curl. So he had more tackles. He had more picks. He had two sacks as well and a defensive touchdown.
As you know, my two favorite non-Steelers teams are the Colts and the Washington football team.
True. Yeah.
So I watched a lot of them both this year. I think Cameron Curl is like Julian Blackman was such a terrific single high type safety. He had some tougher games down the stretch where he got beat late a couple times. He'd be a step slow. Whereas Cameron Curl, which playing single high is so hard.
Yeah. So quickly, just to jump in, that's the reason with my two safeties, I gave Blackman and Winfield the gigs because they complement each other a little bit better.
Blackman was playing single high for a lot of the season on a defense that was one of the best in the mm-hmm. league, and that's a really hard thing to do. Cameron Curl, I thought, was the more total package of a safety. He was really disruptive coming downfield. He'd take anybody's head off. The pick six were off, who was it, Nick Mullins? When he threw the late ball to Juszczyk in the flats, like, that was an incredible play. He was also a seventh round pick, and I think just one of the kind of the hidden gems of the season. Jordan Fuller, really, really good season too, though.
Definitely.
Also played a lot of single high.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one more thing to credit Julian Blackman with, coming so soon off the ATL and then playing like he did is really impressive.
Yeah, definitely. Safety group, really fun.
Yeah, it turned into a really good group.
Okay, finally, our specialists. AJ's favorite time of the day. Actually, a good conversation for kicker.
I honestly think there's a good conversation for punter, too.
Okay. Maybe I forgot about somebody. I don't know.
But no, kicker a little more interesting. So you got Rodrigo Blankenship. You got Tyler Bass. I gave it to Tyler Bass because, you know... You know how it works. Well, first of all, I love Tyler Bass, but he was better from long range. He was 8-9 from 40.
Yeah, that's really what the conversation. Blankenship hit more field goals, was a little more accurate. Was like one of the best deep kickers in the league.
And that's always the more impressive. I think Blankenship was only one of three from 50 plus, something like that.
Yeah, he was.
And Bass was four for six. So that's a way more impressive number.
Both incredible rookie years for kickers.
Definitely, yeah. And you know, one other thing, I gave Bass the Buffalo bump, having to kick in outdoors in the weather at times.
Plus, you know what's weird? One's from Georgia, the other's from Georgia Southern.
It's true. It's true. And both headed Georgia, north.
Kicker state.
So wait, who'd you pick? Did you pick Bass or Blankenship?
I picked Blankenship, but you're the kicker expert. Give it to Bass for the overall team.
Okay, so for punter, did you give it to Braden Mann?
No, I gave it to Joseph Charlton.
Okay, awesome. I gave it to Joseph Charlton, too. And for the similar reasons. He had a better average, 46.3.
Well, do you want to know why I gave it to him?
I would love to.
Well, remember that time we saw the punt that was horrible from him? And everyone's like, can this guy even punt?
Yeah.
Guess what? He can.
Yeah, baby. And you know, that scared me for a bit because I remember when we did our rookie show, I liked Joseph Charleston. I thought he had a boomer.
Yeah, he did.
And yeah, he didn't, you know, he only punted 45 times, but I'm pretty sure he led all punters, rookie punters, for inside 20 on 21. That's an impressive number for only 45 attempts, plus the average. I thought it was pretty clear. But Brandon Mann punted a shit ton for the Jets. So, and he was consistently solid, just not big time numbers. So I think that deserves. But you know, like I saw Tommy Townsend on some people's list for the Chiefs. So a quietly good punter crop this year.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Congrats. Okay, my return specialist, I don't know if there was anybody else even in the conversation. I thought definitely Isaiah Rodgers.
Yeah, easily. I mean, he was one of seven guys with a kick return touchdown this year, period. Averaged 28.8 a kick return. I mean, definitely. I mean, CeeDee Lamb had one, like you said, one return for a touchdown. Jalen Reagor had, I think, only a couple returns, had a punt return touchdown. They got to use him more there. But yeah, I think it definitely was Isaiah Rodgers easily.
Okay, finally, AJ, like the special, like the kicking and the punting, that's your business. My business is the tackling on special teams. And this is also part of the reason I picked Rodrigo Blankenship as the kicker, because I was trying to get as many Colts on my special teams as possible. Without question to me, the all-rookie special teamer is Jordan Glasgow.
Right. Okay. If I didn't put one down, but I thought he was the guy that I – the only name I really saw.
Led all rookies and special teams tackles with 9. Blocked a punt against the Bears.
Right. I forgot about that.
Literally was drafted just to do this.
He was.
So I thought without question, that's got to be your guy. So on my list, I had 3 of the 4 spots going to Colts because Chris Ballard, no special teams. But my honorable mention, someone tied him for special teams tackles for among rookies with 9.
Who was it?
I'll give you one guess. This is like impossible.
Okay. Give me the conference at least.
The conference?
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, I'm not making this easy for myself. Just give me the conference.
Like AFC, NFC?
Yes. That's it.
NFC.
Okay, and that narrowed it down big time. I have no fucking clue.
do you want one more hint?
Okay.
How about the conference he played college football?
Okay, that helps more.
The Big Ten, obviously. Special teams U is the whole conference.
Look, I know this isn't the correct answer, but it should be Josh Metellus.
That's the correct answer.
Yes, go blue, baby.
I knew you'd get there eventually. I just didn't want to be like make it obvious it was someone from Michigan because I knew you would then know it's Josh Metellus.
I know he popped a couple times, so I didn't know he ended up having that good of a year.
Yeah, they tied for two Michigan guys tied for the most special teams tackles and among rookies.
And you know what's awesome too is that coming out when we talked about those guys, we both said they'd be really good special teamers.
Yeah, Michigan produces special teamers. Ohio State produces first round picks.
Stupid. Who would want that garbage?